You guys show back there for time. All right, we're good to go. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So we're all here for advanced SharePoint troubleshooting, right? All right, good deal. This is me. I will be your conductor down this train for the next hour and 15 minutes. I'm Todd Clint. I am a SharePoint MVP. I have been for 7 years or whatever. My renewal date is Sunday, July 1st, so hopefully I'll get back in. The MVP program is a way that Microsoft throws a bone to people like me for promoting and supporting their products for free. So they, once a year, give me a little badge and a little star, pat me on the head. Basically, it just means I'm a big mouth. I like to do these kind of things, write books, blogs, all that kind of stuff. Got a link to my blog up there. My area of emphasis in SharePoint is administrative type stuff. I was a Windows admin all those years ago, an Exchange admin, and SQL admin. So it's a lot of admin topics. You can go out there. Also, for you guys, Tuesday morning at like 3 o'clock. For the States, every Monday night, I do a little live SharePoint show, a little netcast, basically covering all the things that I've dealt with in the last week. There's links to the old ones, so I do it live, and then I record it, and you can download them. That's on my blog also. If you leave any comments on my blog, I try to respond to them, as many as I can. Don't get a lot, so that makes it pretty easy. But if you've got any questions about any of my blog posts, throw it out there. Don't be shy. Used to work for a company, SharePoint 911. 5 months ago, we were bought by Rackspace Hosting. But that URL is still the best way to get to the SharePoint stuff. You can go, if you go to Rackspace/SharePoint, you can get to it, but it's kind of a mess right now. So you can go there. You can email me, todd.clint@rackspace.com. And as a couple of you have already noticed, I am on Twitter, @ToddClint. I won't be on Twitter during this session, so don't ask me questions on Twitter. But I am out there so you can follow me and do whatever crazy thing the kids are doing at the Twitter these days. And that's a picture of me. The first time I did Tech Ed Europe in Barcelona 5 years ago, we took a trip up to Paris, and that's kind of a very glamorous shot of me with the Louvre in the background. Kind of like that picture. So this whole session, I've pulled the agenda slide out. This whole session, we're going to be talking about upgrade. And at this point, you know, the product's been out nearly 3 years, so a lot of folks have already done upgrades. So this isn't going to be a high-level upgrade talk. There's going to be a couple of slides about that, but for the most part, we're going to be getting into the nuts and bolts, looking at database tables, looking at error logs, things like that, to get some of the more advanced things. If you've got a basic upgrade question, don't be afraid to shout it out. I will do what I can to answer it. We're all here. Somebody else is probably thinking the same thing. It's fine. If it ends up being that there's going to be a long answer and we're not going to have time, I'll, you know, ask you to find me afterwards or something like that. But by all means, during this session, ask questions away. You know, it's good back and forth, good interaction. But for the most part, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about general upgrade stuff and a lot of time talking about specific problems that I've seen. At this point in time, I've done probably close to 100 upgrades of various sizes and shapes. So I've seen a lot of things. I'm also a really slow learner, so I've made the same mistakes a whole bunch of times. So hopefully the fact that I make the same mistake 6 or 7 times can prevent maybe one or two of you from making the same mistake. That's kind of the hope from this session. So we're kind of all familiar with this particular set of facts here. We have, going from 2007 to 2010, we have two supported upgrade scenarios. An in-place upgrade, where we've got a nice, shiny SharePoint 2007 box. It's running 64-bit this and 64-bit that. We download the SharePoint 2010 executable. We run install, next, finish, and ta-da, we've got SharePoint 2010. Has anybody done that? It's okay. Don't be ashamed. We're all friends here. I've done it for a couple of customers, and for the most part, it works. Did anybody try that going from 2003 to 2007? It was terrible. If you did it with the previous version, if it failed, you were done. The good news about if the 2003 to 2007 failed, there was no decision making to do. You had to restore everything. It was destroyed. There was no fixing it. There was no starting over. It was just a fire everywhere. So that was good because there was no decisions. Get your tapes out, do your thing. From 2007 to 2010, that's changed considerably. They've done a much better job. I have accidentally tested this. I had a couple of in-place upgrades that have failed. I ran out of disk space once. I had the wrong SQL version once. I've done a couple of pretty dumb things. But it is pretty forgiving, where you can fix the problem and then start it back up, and it'll pick up where it left off. That being said, I don't think I've done that for maybe one or two production environments, and they were little environments, itty-bitty little things, like 12 or 15 employees. Half of them didn't know SharePoint existed. So chances are you're probably not going to go that route. Not only do you just not have a lot of control over that, you know, you can't control what order the databases get upgraded in or anything like that, but it doesn't give you the opportunity to fix past sins, you know, because everything just gets upgraded exactly how it was. So if you had bad architecture in 2007, you've just upgraded it to bad architecture in 2010, things like that. So for the most part, not going to do a lot of in-places. Anybody considering an in-place? Good. That's what I like to see. The other option that we have is the database attach upgrade, and that's what everybody's going to end up doing. And that's what the focus of this session is going to be. Now, all the things that I talk about will pertain to in-place upgrade, but I'm going to be doing a database attach, so I'm not going to show them, but it'll all work. There are three types of databases that we can attach. Content databases, which is going to be what everybody does. You can also attach your SSP database if you've got Moss. You can attach it to SharePoint 2010 as your user profile database. Has anybody done that? Anybody had a few folks do that? There's kind of two main reasons that people do that. Number one is because in 2007 they've added a bunch of properties to their user profiles, done some crazy stuff, done some customization, and they don't want to redo all that in 2010, and they don't want to lose the information that's in that, that's in 2007. That's one reason. The other reason is if you've got a profile that's huge, 10, 20,000 users, something like that, and you don't want to redo that import, you can bring that database in. I have been surprised at how well that works. I've done that for probably 10 or 12 customers, and it's always worked way better than I actually expected it to be. And that might just be because the user profile service as a whole is kind of a stinker, so I figure everything associated with that's gonna try to get me. But that's worked out pretty well. So if you've got any crazy customizations in your SSPs, chances are that'll work. The last one is the project server databases. Do we have any project server folks gonna upgrade project server? Couple? Good. This morning I was working in the SharePoint booth, the product booth, and one person came up and said they had SharePoint 2007, and they had a separate Project 2007 farm. And they were, you know, obviously Project 2010 sits on top of SharePoint Server 2010. And they were asking whether they should combine them in 2010 or they should have two separate 2010 farms. Unfortunately for that one, I didn't have a lot of great answers. I don't feel very strongly one way or the other on that. But one of your options is to do a project server. You can attach your project databases and bring all that up. This one, nobody will ever do. But if you have, and I'm not even going to ask for a show of hands because I would assume you would be far too ashamed to actually admit to it, but if you have a basic install or a single server install of SharePoint 2007, and again, don't raise your hand because I'll probably kick you out. If you do that and you do an in-place upgrade, as if you couldn't have done enough bad things at once, then you do an in-place upgrade. They have this thing now where SQL Express with 2007 could handle big databases because it actually used this Windows internal database. SharePoint 2010 doesn't have that anymore. It's got SQL Express, which supports much smaller databases. So you can get in this situation where your databases are too big to upgrade. So that's why there's this file stream stuff. You've all heard of RBS, the remote blob store, and the file stream provider. That's why that's in there, so that you can upgrade those databases. But everybody here's too smart for that kind of a situation, right? All right, good. Glad to hear that. Unsupported scenarios. The first one, and this is the one that really causes a lot of problems, anything older than SharePoint 2007 Service Pack 2. So SharePoint 2007 RTM cannot be upgraded. SP1 cannot be upgraded. SharePoint 2003 cannot be upgraded with out-of-the-box tools. So SharePoint 2007 would have come out, 5 years ago, something like that, a little over that. I saw a SharePoint 2007 RTM farm within the last 30 days. Within the last 30 days, I've seen a farm that had SharePoint 2007 with zero patches on it, just fresh out of the box. So they still are out there. You can't go directly from WSS to SharePoint Server. You got to go to either Foundation or Moss and across. But you can do it, but you can't go direct. My favorite method for upgrading 2003 to 2007 was the side-by-side. That was kind of like the SharePoint upgrade for guys that are afraid of commitment. You could upgrade a site collection and then shut it down, and then upgrade it and pull it down, because you had SharePoint 2003 and SharePoint 2007 running side by side in the same box. You can't do that anymore. We lost that option. So that's one of the things we can't do, which I was kind of sad about that. One of the first things you should do, obviously, when you're going to be doing any kind of upgrading, planning is your friend. You've got to plan, plan, plan. And one of the things that you should do when you're planning is look at your patch levels. It will surprise you how much of an impact this will have on your upgrade. We know that you need Service Pack 2 for SharePoint 2007 to be able to even upgrade at all. But with patches post-2007, almost every cumulative update, and the cumulative updates come out every other month, every even month, almost every one of those cumulative updates has had some sort of fix that makes the upgrade path smoother. Fixed things in the database to make things go smoother. There is the pre-upgrade check. The tool we're going to talk about has a rules file. That's gotten updated several times to pull out some false positives, things like that. So even upgrading SharePoint 2007 will make your process go a little better. That's also kind of scary, though. How many people have had a farm blow up when they patched it in SharePoint 2007? Yeah, a lot of us. So that's kind of scary, so you got to kind of weigh the risk versus the reward. If you don't have SP2, you got to have SP2. You got to get at least that far. And I think like the April 2009 or the October 2009 patch had some of the big upgrade fixes, and the rest are just kind of incremental. So if you can, get that far. Same goes with SharePoint 2010. The better patched that system is, the better your upgrade will go. So I've got a blog post on my blog that SP 2010 builds goes to that has a list of every build number of SharePoint 2010 and the patches and all that. Who in here has seen that post before? Excellent. So you guys will notice. So originally I just had like the build number, so if you knew what the number was, you could match it up to what the name was, RTM, SP1, whatever. And then somebody said, hey, you should have the links to them so I can download them. I'm like, that's a pretty good idea. So I added all the links and all that, and I thought that was it. And then with the first cumulative update that came out after Service Pack 1, we had this new thing happen. The patch came out, we all ran out and installed it, and the Microsoft went, oops, and they pulled it back because it broke SharePoint farms all to pieces. And that was the very first one that they ever did that with. So then we kind of got scared. So with that patch, I added a fifth column that was regressions, bugs, that kind of stuff. A regression being something that used to work and doesn't anymore. So while I'll tell you should patch your SharePoint 2010 farm before you upgrade or whenever, be very judicious with those patches. Make sure that you're doing it for a reason, you know, fix a user profile bug, whatever, because of the however many that have come out so far, I think 4 have been pulled because they destroyed systems. 4, including the most recent one. The last patch that's been published was the April 2012 CU, and it was pulled about a month after it came out because it started killing SharePoint sites. And that was kind of a sneaky one. The problem that it had was it would randomly make certain webs or lists just not available. So you would go to a web, and it would just give you a server 503 error, and it was done. And you couldn't fix it. I tried. So be very careful of those patches. As of right now, I think probably the most stable patch is the February 2012 CU. That one has no problems that I know of. But you can go there, and again, with any patch, you can find it on that page and hit the regressions link, and if there's any problems that I know of, they'll be on there. And if you find any problems, hit me up on Twitter or email them to me, and I'll add them to that page. So when you're installing your SharePoint 2010 farm, if you've got a fresh one, you're going to want to put Service Pack 1 on it, and then probably that February 2012 CU. There is one exception to that. How many of you think you're going to bring your user profile database over from 2007? You, sir, don't put the patches on. Supposedly, and I haven't been able to reproduce this, but I've heard it from very smart people, that SP1 and later introduces a bug with that one particular operation. I've done it past SP1 and not had any problems, but so you should probably stay on RTM and then patch after you upgrade. But that page, SP2010 builds at the top. There's about 4 different ways to figure out what patch level you're at, so if you don't know, you can find it. If you haven't installed SharePoint 2010 yet, this blog post will tell you how you can bake the patches into your install. So you just install SharePoint, and magically you have an SP1 installation. It's really, really easy. This blog post, this is such a great topic, I actually blogged it twice. I blogged it once right after the product came out and then forgot about it. And somebody asked me a year later, I'm like, I should blog that. I did it all again, more screenshots. So I actually have two blog posts on that. But it's really easy. You basically extract the patch, copy it to a directory, and then just run your install. But those, all of those kind of things, they fix little glitchy things so that your upgrade will go more smoothly. And if you're going to patch it anyway, might as well do it right away. Yes, sir? So his question was, can you include cumulative updates in this? Absolutely. And in my blog post, I do exactly that. So essentially, when you slipstream, so I guess, and this is a good audience, I should bring up the other caveats. When you slipstream, there's a folder. We've all downloaded SharePoint 2010. If you run that executable with a /X, it extracts it, throws it out onto your file system. And in there, there's an updates folder. And they've been kind enough to leave a little README in there that says, drop your patches here. So when you do the slipstreaming, essentially what you're doing is you extract your install, then you extract your patch, and you take all the files from the patch, drop it in that updates folder. So then if you've got a cumulative update, then you take the cumulative update after the service pack and drop them over top, and it updates the files. Yep. So he said, I did that and told me a bunch of the files existed. Do I want to overwrite them? You do. Yep, and you can go, so that's kind of scary, right? Because you just put a patch out there, and now you're going to, what if you got the wrong versions? So SharePoint patches per, they call it product, but it's per, like, part of the product. So Access Services has a separate patch from Excel Services, which has separate patches from Search and all that. For every one of those, for a patch, there are two files. There's an XML file that explains the patch and then the patch itself. If you go on the patch file itself and right-click in Properties, it will tell you the build number of that patch. So you can look at the one in your Updates folder and then look at the one in your other folder and make sure that it's the right versions. But that is kind of scary. Now, one thing you can't do, and I've gotten this question a few times, I'm an American. I speak exactly one language. Because within 1,000 miles of my house, everybody speaks exactly one language. So I don't have to deal with language packs very much. For folks like you, that probably comes up, because you guys get to speak more languages. The language packs can't be slipstreamed, because the language packs are actually different products. So you can't slipstream a language pack with this. But you can slipstream the language pack patches. So if you install a server with English, and then you're going to put the German language pack on, you can take the German language pack installation, extract it. It's going to have that same updates folder. Get SP1 for German, extract it, drop it in that updates folder. How do you get the CUs? They're already included, yeah. So the service packs are language specific. The CUs are international, which is why in June of last year when Service Pack 1 came out for English, it was 300 meg-ish. And 12 days later, the next cumulative update came out, it was a gig because the service pack had only English. The cumulative update had all the languages. So then you have to do the same thing with the cumulative update and copy the right folder then. And then when you install the language pack, it's patched all the way through. Same with the Office web apps. Same story. You can't bake them in here, but you can extract them and then patch their installations as well. Yes, sir? What if you have more languages than just German and English? Rinse and repeat. It's the same process. Now, part of the reason that I want you to put your patches on first is because we've all done it. You put your patches on. What's the step after you put the patches on? You run the config wizard. What's the config wizard do? It walks through all of your content databases and upgrades them. So if you don't patch this first, you install SharePoint 2010, you attach your databases and spend X number of hours upgrading them. And then you get done, and you install the service pack, and then you spend X number of hours upgrading your databases. And then you install the next cumulative update and spend X number of hours updating your databases. So if you slipstream all of this in, then when you do that initial database attach, it will take the same amount of time, but you won't have to run those other tests. So with your language pack question, if there's nothing in that database that has those other languages, then put it on whenever. But if there is, if you've got stuff in German and French and Dutch and all that, put as many of those on ahead of time as you can so that when you do the attach, it does it in one fell swoop. Yes, sir? Mm-hmm. Yes. So his question was, I've got SharePoint installed. I need Service Pack 1, and I need some cumulative updates. I love this slipstreaming. Can I do that with those? Unfortunately, not. When you extract out Service Pack 1, it's just files. There's no directory. And I've not found, and also, when you extract it out, the installer doesn't come out. All you get is the patches themselves. So I don't know of any way to slipstream cumulative updates into the patch installer, unfortunately. I would love that, though, and I get that question all the time. So patching's important, and just kind of a tangent, has nothing to do with upgrade, but you should always have a test environment where you do your patches first, because if another one comes out like the April CU that deletes stuff and breaks things, you want to find that out early. And kind of a side note, we've spent a lot of time talking about patching. Patching actually is an upgrade. It's the same process. It's the same mechanism. It's the same piece of code. Upgrades are called V2V or version-to-version upgrades. Patches are called B2B or build-to-build upgrades. So it's the same stuff. So the first step you should do is run STS8 on 2007, is run STS8EM-O pre-upgrade check. How many folks have ran that? A lot of hands. Good. I will tell you that even if you're not ready to do your upgrade yet, you should run that. You should all run that. Not only does it give you great information about your upgrade, but it just gives you great information about your farm. Gives you your what site definitions you're using, what your servers are, your database sizes. Gives you a list of all of the lists and libraries that have too many items in them. How many of you have large lists in your farm? See, the thing is, everybody does, because there's some hidden lists that have that, like workflow history lists. I've had many, many customers get nailed by that. If you're a heavy user of workflows, every time a workflow fires, it adds an entry for that into the workflow history list. Now, there are jobs, there's even a job called the workflow history cleanup list. It doesn't do what you think that it does. What it does is it goes into that workflow history list and decouples it from the workflow that ran it, but it doesn't delete the entry in the history list. So I've had customers where they had a workflow that worked fine in 2007, would not work in 2010, because the history list in 2010 was large, and SharePoint 2010 introduces large list throttling. So the workflow would try to fire, it would try to load up the history list, the object model would kill that, the workflow would end. So that this, if for nothing else, if you run this pre-upgrade check, it will tell you about that. So we went back, looked at the pre-upgrade check, here's the list. Actually, I wish it would have went that way. It took me about an hour to piece it all together. But for the sake of this story, I was very smart, and I looked at the pre-upgrade check and saw it immediately. So it's great. One of the good things about this is if you try to run STS8EM-O pre-upgrade check and you can't, it's not there, that means you don't have Service Pack 2. That's a good gut check, because that was included with Service Pack 2. Great, like I said, great documentation for your farm. It's also going to give you all these possible issues. If you've got any site or object orphans, modified databases, if you've got any third-party stuff that has changed your databases, oh, Microsoft hates that. They really wish you wouldn't do that. This will tell you about it. Anything that you're missing. And the great thing about this is it's completely read-only. It leaves no tags in your databases. There's no way to tell if your database has had this run. So it doesn't change anything. You can run on production systems, run it in the middle of the day. It doesn't matter. We're going to look at a live one, but this is a screenshot of one. And you can kind of see when you kick that out, there's three files kicked out. There's an HTML file, which is this one. There's a text version and an XML version. They wanted to make sure that we had everything. As you can tell, this is quite a complicated farm, five content databases totaling 250 megabytes. But this is what it looks like. But again, you've got this great information right here. And I don't know how many of you guys have managers. Managers love these like graphs and numbers and stuff. They want to see this number a lot. So this is an easy way to get that. But it's going to tell you, like right here, we can see what version of the farm we're at. Just good information all the way around. So we can see when that was run. This is a good one. STS8EM pre-upgrade check is something you do on the 2007 side. I will tell you when you run that, if you find problems, fix them on the 2007 side. If you've got site orphans, things like that, have anybody had to deal with orphans in SharePoint? Few of you haven't. So let's talk about orphans a little bit. Orphans, unlike the movies, they're not adorable, little red-haired urchins that steal your heart. Orphans are objects inside of SharePoint that don't have parents. So every item inside of SharePoint has a GUID, because I'm convinced the SharePoint team has a campaign to run the world out of GUIDs. So everything has GUIDs. So every list item has a GUID, and its parent is the list that it's in. That list's parent is the web that it's in, so on and so forth. So an orphan in SharePoint is like a list whose parent web doesn't exist. Something happened, you know, you did a create web and killed it, or you did a restore and killed it, or something, and you've got these objects whose parent doesn't exist. Those are something you want to definitely take care of on the 2007 side. There is exactly one way to get rid of orphans, and this is where it very, very much deviates from the movies. You can't readopt the orphans. The only way to get rid of the orphans in SharePoint is to delete them, make them go away. So there's an STS-ADM operation, database repair, which will show you all the orphans in your farm. And then there's an optional parameter you can use to clean those up, and then you just keep running it until you run out of orphans. Because think about if you've got a web whose site collection is gone, so the web is an orphan, you delete that orphan, now you've just orphaned a bunch of lists. So you run it again, get rid of those lists, now you've just orphaned a bunch of items. So you got to keep running it until you get a clean list. If you find sites that are using site definitions that don't exist, things like that, you want to clean those up on the 2007 side. Everything you clean up on the 2007 side is just that much less you got to do when you actually upgrade on the 2010 side. After you get your database to 2010, you can run this test SP content database. And this is like the SharePoint 2010 version of pre-upgrade check. This looks at your content database and all the things that it's trying to do and says, can I actually do that? Can I render that kind of site? Can I show that file? Can I do whatever? Again, this is optional, just like pre-upgrade check is, but everybody should do it for every database. It's just good planning. And again, doesn't write anything. You can run it against the 2007 database that you're bringing in. You can also run it against the 2010 database if you're bringing it from another farm, something like that. Great little tool. Okay, one of the, yes, sir. So he says, what if I can't bring myself to get rid of those adorable little orphans and I don't delete them in 2007? What'll happen? A couple of different things depends on the orphan. The database will probably upgrade, but you'll get an error, you'll get errors, and then you'll just have these orphans in your database. Everything will probably work, you'll just get a bunch of errors. And there are two types of orphans. There are object orphans, which are the kind that I explained before. There are also site collection orphans, which are much easier to handle. SharePoint keeps a list of all of your site collections in the config database. And there's a table that has every site collection and then the content database that it's in. So when the request comes in, it matches it up, goes to that database to look for the stuff. If that list ever gets out of sync with the actual content database, like maybe the content database lists a site collection that isn't in that sites table, that's an orphan also. So the easy way to fix that one is you just detach that content database, reattach it right away, and it fixes that up. So if you get those kind of orphans, when you attach, they just go away. But the object orphans, yeah, you can upgrade them. Then it's just more stuff you got to churn through, make sure upgrade take longer. I've done it. I mean, I've upgraded them. They work. So logging. So one of the greatest improvements from SharePoint 2007 to 2010 was the logging. Oh, my goodness. Now, you know, I felt like as a guy who could fix SharePoint 2003 and a guy that could fix SharePoint 2007, there was kind of some magic to it. There was kind of some divining to it. You know, like it was not something that anybody could learn. You had to feel it, you know. And then SharePoint 2010 comes out, and everything's logged, and there's tools to read the logs, and there's correlation IDs. And now I kind of feel like my mom could troubleshoot SharePoint if she had to. So that comes in handy for us when we're doing upgrades because there's logging. But we've also got better upgrade logging. Now, how many of you have scars from upgrading from 2003 to 2007? A few of you. Do you have a question? Okay, I'll get back to you in a second. When you did upgrades to SharePoint 2007, you also had an upgrade log, but you had exactly one, and it never rolled over. So you could do a bunch of upgrades, and if you did 10 gradual upgrades in a row and the 11th one failed, you're like, oh, I go to the upgrade database. That upgrade database is like 35 meg because it's every upgrade that's ever happened. If they ask, I'm not here. So for this one, each upgrade operation gets its own file, which is awesome. And more importantly, it gets a secondary file that's only bad news, that's only errors. So you get your upgrade log that's got all the good news. I upgraded this list, I upgraded that list. But then it's also got the error log, which is just all the stuff you did wrong. So when an upgrade fails, you just jump right to the error log, see what's happening. And not only does it give the information that the regular log has, but it gives you call stacks, whatever that is. Developers know what that is, but it gives you some great information. So it's really helpful. And the other thing, it was in 2007. Every upgrade didn't always have the same column, so if you tried to like bring it into Excel or something, things wouldn't line up. In 2010, they all have the same columns. So you, sir, had a question. Yes. So you have, I'll repeat the question once I've got it. So you have two databases that have the same site collection in them? Mm-hmm. Okay. They're in the same database? Okay, so I think I know so he's saying if I do the detach and reattach and I've got two site collections in that database, how do I know which one will be active? If they're in the same database, they should have different paths and be different site collections. So the reason you detach and reattach is when you detach the database from SharePoint, SharePoint goes into that sites table and just kills everything from that database. It just removes every one of them. And so if there's references there to a site collection that doesn't exist, it's gone. And then when you reattach that database, it looks through that content database and does an inventory of it and adds all the site collections. So if you've got two site collections in there, they both should pop back in. Have you had problems with that? They have the same URL? So you have two site collections in the same database with the same path? Oh, yeah, that's possible. Yeah, I've seen it. So if I had that situation, I'd make sure my resume wasn't in that database, or CV. I would make sure my CV was not in that database. I'd get that on a USB drive somewhere, keep it in my pocket. I would do a site collection backup of one, whichever one is active now. So you had that somewhere. Detach your database, and then reattach it, kind of spin the wheel. Are you missing the one that's the other one? I mean, I assume this is a real situation. Is the one that's active the correct one? If that was the case, then I would back that site collection up, detach that content database, create a new content database, restore that site collection in the new database, and set that other database on fire. Yeah, so I think for you, yeah, your problem isn't the orphan, your problem is the identical twins in the, yeah. So, yeah, I'll be at the Rackspace booth probably today and tomorrow. So if you've got want to dig into that deeper, swing on by, and I'll give you something for your troubles, and you've got troubles. So we got the upgrade logs here. All right. So this is the ULS log. It's not the upgrade log, but we've all seen that little critter right there, the correlation ID. Again, part of SharePoint's campaign to run the world right the hell out of GUIDs. Every conversation inside of SharePoint is given a correlation ID. The idea, this isn't an error number, you can't look it up, but this is a number that's assigned to every log entry that has to do with the same conversation. So now I can get this, a wonderful page in my browser, and normally we would have to take the time and the date and go to the log file and try to match it up. And then, like, there's the time zone thing where the IIS log is in UTC, but the SharePoint logs are in local time. And for you guys, it's only a couple hours off. For me, it's like it's Thursday here, it's Tuesday at home. It's all very confusing. Now I can just take that correlation ID and go into the log file and just search for that. And it'll take me directly to the error that caused it. So if you ever need to create a correlation ID, this is a good demo trick. The easiest way to generate an error like this with a correlation ID is to take a team site and try to add an enterprise search center site to it, because that requires the publishing infrastructure, and this errors out. So that's what we did here. Yes, sir. So if you have he says, what if I have a farm that has multiple front ends? How do I find it? Well, you can do this on any of your farms. We're going to talk about later, PowerShell has a commandlet merge SP log file, and it will take all of the log files from all of the machines and dump them on one machine in one file. So that's the other way to do it. Make sure when you do that, though, by default, it takes the last hour's worth. You probably don't need an hour's worth, so you can tell it like 30 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever. Who's used this? Yeah, there should be a lot more hands. This is the single greatest tool, second to SharePoint, of course, in the entire universe. This is the MSDN ULS Log Viewer, which is sad because there's also a CodePlex ULS Log Viewer. Same name, very confusing. You want the MSDN one. This thing does a bunch of stuff. I could do 75 minutes on this tool alone. It'd probably be very boring, but I could do it. But a couple of great things that it does, it lets you watch your log files live. So you can watch them in real time. So that Unix folks, they've had that tail command for a while. We've got that now for our log files. It lets you do some great color coding. It lets you search for correlation IDs, filter, all that kind of great stuff. There's the URL. Again, you want the MSDN one, not the CodePlex one. The CodePlex one isn't bad. It's just I'm most familiar with this one. And it looks like this. So this is that same error that we had before. This is what it looks like in the ULS log viewer. So you can see every piece of that conversation right up to the one here where it actually failed out when we tried to create that search center. Very, very handy. Again, I feel like my mom could fix SharePoint at this point. Yes, sir. So he's like, you and your log files. So this tool, so if you have multiple web front ends, this tool has a tabbed interface. So you can actually open up the log files on every one of your servers at the same time and have them all running. So you can have the tab open, so you go to one tab and search for that correlation ID. It doesn't show up. Switch to the next tab, check for it there. But you can have multiple servers loaded up. And actually, this tool, you can load it on your desktop and just point to the file path if you want. If it's on a SharePoint server, you can do it locally, but it'll also do it. Now, are you convinced that it's the greatest tool ever? Come on. Does it put them all in one window? I did not know that. I did not know that. Did you write the CodePlex tool in my time? All right. Okay. I talk about this all the time, and I'm always worried that the guy that wrote that CodePlex tool is in the audience somewhere just seething, just waiting to give me all zeros on my presentation so that when they both came out, I tried them both, and for whatever reason, this is the one that stuck, and I'm sure the CodePlex one is great. Sure, the developer's mom loves him very much, I'm sure. So for log files, we've gone through a bunch of this. We talked about the merge SP log file. Here's another thing that I do every time I start PowerShell. And I'm a huge PowerShell fan. Love PowerShell to death. Every time I open up PowerShell, I run this command, start transcript. And what that does, for even outside of the realm of upgrades, it creates a log file of everything I type and everything PowerShell says back. So this is great for if you're bleary-eyed some night trying to figure out how to do something in PowerShell, and you figure it out, and you're on top of the world, and then you go to sleep, and you forget it all. If you have start transcript, then you can just go back the next day, go into your transcript file, see what you did. If you're like me and you're a consultant, and a customer says, SharePoint exploded, and it's all because of what you did in PowerShell, I can go back to the transcript file, and I can say that didn't happen. So that's great. But for upgrades, when we run that test SP content database, it's going to throw up hundreds of lines of problems. And you're going to catch like the last couple hundred in your buffer. If you've got that running, you just open up that file and you can find all your errors that way. New SP log file is a great one. That rolls the log file immediately. So by default, SharePoint rolls the log file twice an hour. But then you get some big log files and all that. If you run new SP log file, it'll close the current one, start a new one. So then if you need to do something, you can see exactly where it shows up. Get SP log event, I would never use. That just gives you the stuff in the window. Merge SP log files is like for that when you've got multiple files. So let's go look at some of these tools. Let me unlock my laptop here. Nobody look at my password. Excellent. Okay, so I've got SharePoint here. What's wrong with this picture, by the way? There's no red bar at the top. For some of you, this might be the first time in your life you've ever seen one of these without the red bar at the top. So I'm going to give you a tip. That red bar is just a list, so I just went in and deleted all the items before I started the demo. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah?
And I have to run the configuration wizard tool to install the front end server for the server and run it again, and then the configuration wizard is back.
So he mentioned that if he configured everything with PowerShell, he didn't have that configuration wizard link. I would argue you never need to click that.
Sure.
Ever. So why did you remove your server from the farm and add it back so you could get that link that you'll never click back?
Because I also missed the managed services on the server.
Oh. So that's, and I don't want to get into a big install talk, but I never use either of the wizards when I'm creating SharePoint. I never use the white wizard or the gray wizard. I got blog posts on that I can bore you with. So here we are. I created a web app specifically for this session, upgrade.contoso.com. And let's pop out to PowerShell here. Who doesn't love PowerShell? Let me make this big enough so that you guys can see it. And I think that's here. Well, that might be it. Can you guys in the back see that? If I keep it up on the top of the screen, are we good? All right, excellent. So I can do a get SP content database. There are none. Oh, so I'm looking for the upgrade. So we've got one here, and it's got a site collection in it. So let's see what it is. Actually, let's. Oh, so that is the Office web cache, now that I think about it. Yeah, so it's the Office web app viewing cache, so that won't be a problem for us. The reason I bring that up, though, is because if you're creating a web app, whenever you create a web app, you have to create a content database, and then you're going to be tempted, to create a site collection, which is not a bad deal. Do that. That's fine. But just know that before you attach your other databases, if you've got a site collection in one of those databases that sits at slash, you have to delete it first. You can't have two. So I brought over a database. As I was preparing for my demos, which will surprise most of you as I walk through these demos, I brought this database over. And it's a 2007 database. There's a query that we can do. Now, I'm going to do something that you should never do in production. Never touch your databases in SQL in production. Don't do it. You're going to feel tempted. Don't do it. Don't read to them. Don't write to them. Don't update them. Don't whatever. So we'll pretend this is a test environment, and that makes it okay. So this is the versions table, and this shows me all of the versions of the database. We can see that that is a SharePoint 2007 database. Okay, so I want to attach that to my upgrade web app. So what am I going to run? Test SP content database. So we'll do that. What am I forgetting? Start my transcript. I don't want to miss all that good information. So this just throws it in the documents folder for my user, so easy to find. So I'm going to test SP content database. The name of it is, I'm going to copy and paste it so I don't mistype it. I can't type with all you people. Oh, geez. That nearly got hysterical. And for my web application, upgrade.contoso.com. So it's going through, oh my goodness gracious. So what it's doing right now is it's going through that database and it's looking at all the things that that's going to try to render, and then it's saying, do I have the stuff in this web app to render? So why do we have to give it the web app name? Because we can have features that are specified at the web app level, things like that, that can impact whether it can be rendered. One of the tricks that I like to do when I'm testing these for customers is this is just a list of objects. So I can do this and do a dot count. And that's how many errors it was, 231. That's how many errors I had. So the reason that I do that is because then as I start adding things and installing things to try to fix these errors, I can watch that count go down, and it makes me feel good. Lets me know that I'm getting something accomplished. So let's look at that file and see where we're at. So I'm just going to go to my transcript here. When you're troubleshooting these errors, it's important to start at the top. And that's why it's important to have that transcript, because if you've only got the last 200 or 300 lines, you're going to be tempted to start fighting those errors from the bottom up, because they're the only ones that you can see. But you can tell from this that it starts with the most significant problems at the top and then works down to least significant. So there's a really good chance that if I fix this missing site definition error, I'm going to fix a whole bunch of the missing setup file errors at the bottom. So start from the top and work down. Now, does anybody notice? I've got some common threads. Does anybody know what my problem is with this database? That's a hint right there. Anybody? Two words. Fab40, exactly. This database is stinking with Fab40 site collections. So how many of you guys used the Fab40 in 2007? You guys are really lucky. Usually it's half the room. So the Fab40 were 20 site templates and 20 site definitions that Microsoft gave away for free, with the best of intentions, I hope, to show you what SharePoint 2007 could do. The problem is everybody and their dog, including me and my dog, installed them in the SharePoint 2007 forms and went, "This is awesome," and then started using them. And there's no way to upgrade them. Well, there's no way to upgrade the site definition versions. So for you four or five folks that raised your hand, my heart goes out to you. You have my condolences. That's going to be the bulk of the problems you have when you do your upgrades. It's going to be all custom code, and the Fab40 are the worst. So a couple of clues here. If the site definition ID is 75,800 and something, that's a Fab40 site definition. That's what you've got there. I pick on the Fab40 because they're easy, but if you've got other site definitions that you've downloaded from the web or developers in-house have made, this is a good time to find those and then figure out if you need them. So we're going to look through and we're going to find where this is at, and I'm going to find out that 75801 is like the knowledge base or something. Maybe I'm not using that, because like everybody else, when the Fab40 came out, I installed all 40 of them just to see what they did, and then I never touched them again. So if I can figure out where that's at, there's a really good chance I don't need it, and I don't need to upgrade it, and I don't need to fight it. So then I go back to the 2007 side, I delete it, back that database up, and bring it over. So we'll go through, we got a whole bunch of those. The other thing that's interesting from this is that part right there. Upgrade blocking equals false. We had 231 errors when I tried to test this database. What happens if I just mounted any? What happens if I just say, SharePoint, to heck with you. You're kind of whiny. I've never really liked you anyway. I'm just going to mount that database. What happens? It mounts, and it upgrades, and most everything works. As long as all 231 have the upgrade blocking equals false. So what this says SharePoint will mount that database and will do everything in its power to upgrade every bit that it can, but some stuff's just not going to work. And until you add the stuff, it's not going to work. So some of these, there's going to be a couple, especially if you're going from MOS to SharePoint Server, which I assume 100% of you are. There's a couple, there's going to be an Excel web part error. You can't make that one go away. You just can't. It's a bug. Can't make it go away. So you will always upgrade that. But that's important whenever you're seeing those errors to see if it's an upgrade blocking error. So since I created a web or a site collection from every one of those, we got a whole string of those little devils. After we get past that, we're seeing some missing features. Anybody want to guess what all of the features that start with 75, alpha, 0, foxtrot, blah, blah, anybody want to guess what all those features have in common? They're part of the Fab40. So you're probably not going to be lucky enough that all of your feature errors are going to be FAB 40 errors. But I can tell you every time I go to a customer and we run this thing and I get this log, all of those GUIDs that I don't recognize as the nefarious FAB 40, I just copy the GUID, I paste it in Google or Bing and search for it. Because if you've got some specific third-party software that created all these sites, somebody's going to have blogged about it. It's going to be out there. And that will help you figure out what that site definition is for. Because one thing you'll notice in here is it tells you where, tells you that it's referenced. It doesn't tell you where it's referenced. Golly, that would be nice to know. This is referenced 14 times in this database, but I'm not going to tell you where. So it makes it sort of tough to figure those out. And I'll give you some hints on how to get that. But if you've got these crazy GUIDs, it takes you like 5 seconds to copy it, paste it into a search engine, and just see what shows up. Because chances are you're going to find some stuff. I found a lot of them that way. Okay, so we got missing features. Missing features. Okay, here's another one, missing setup files. So, again, not going to block the upgrade, just going to cause some problems. As we look at that feature, we at the top, we had a missing site definition. You think maybe that missing site definition might have installed that file? Pretty good chance of that. And maybe that missing feature installed that site definition that installed that file? Pretty good chance. These are good ones because they actually have paths in them. So now you can start trying to figure out where they're at from there. Some of the stuff you're going to have, missing setup files and all that, is just going to be files that people have thrown in the file system. We've all done it. In SharePoint 2007, if you wanted to add an image or something, you just drop it in the images folder on your SharePoint server, reference it in your web page, and off to the races you go. Well, you get some of these nasty little errors. So then that's easy. You're like, oh, slash images, whatever. Grab it on the 2007 side, put it on the 2010 side. Fix it, put it in a database at some point, but you're going to have some of those. But again, it's referenced. I'm not going to tell you where, but it's referenced. Missing setup file. Missing assembly. Holy crud. But again, same kind of thing. We had features that were missing. What are some of the things that features install? Event receivers. So work from the top down. Okay, so let's say that we know that that database will upgrade. Okay, so here's another one of those things that you should never do in production. But I'm going to assume that every one of you, you're in this session, probably fairly smart, above average in attractiveness. You're going to do this in a test environment first. You're going to bring this into a test environment and see what's going on. So mucking around in your databases in a test environment is okay. Don't do it in production. So we've got these features, but we don't know where they're installed at. So let's grab one. I like the look of that one right there. So I'm going to copy that one. One of the tables in your content database is the features table. What this gives us is a list of the features and where they're used. You know, the information that we would have loved to have gotten from that report but didn't. We can say where feature ID equals that. There's where that feature's used. Who wants to remember that for me so I can go search? No. So this tells us the site collection and the web ID of the place that that feature is used. If that feature is used in more than one place, it would show up in more than one rows. So now we can take this web ID and we can go to the... It's not the other place in this one. Webs table. See how much fun upgrades are? Where ID equals that. Okay, so there is our URL right there. So now we can see that, and if it's too small, it says site slash /enfab40admin template/IT. Now we can go into 2007 and go to that URL and determine whether that's something important or not. Chances are it's not. Delete it in 2007, copy your databases over, do all that. Is that helpful for anybody? Has anybody tried to troubleshoot these and try to figure out where all that stuff's at? Okay. As much fun as all the SQL stuff is, and I know you guys were just at the edge of your seats to see how this ends up, there is a PowerShell way to do all this that actually matches it all up. So, and I'll give you some links to that, where you say, find missing feature, here's the GUID, and it just spits out the URLs that have it. But I wanted to walk you through this way so you kind of understand what's going on. And should you run that PowerShell on a production environment? Anybody? What's that they say here in Holland? Nay. Nay. Shouldn't do it in production. So I showed you how to do it with web or with features. If we have missing web parts, it's in that table. If we have missing setup files, it's in that table. But again, you're going to end up using PowerShell or something. But that's one way you can track down those problem websites, because for whatever reason, Microsoft didn't see fit to give that to us in any of the reports as to where the actual problems are at. So we can do it like that. But let's go ahead and just mount that database anyway. So another thing that comes up, and I'm cheating because this is a demo box, is when you bring your database over, so you make a copy of your 2007 database, you back it up in SQL, you bring it over, you restore it to your 2010 test SQL box. One of the common mistakes is not fixing the permissions on the database, because the accounts that you use in your SharePoint 2010 test environment are probably different than the ones in your 2007 environment. I hope they are. So make sure you give your account, whatever account you're running this as, make sure this account is a DBO of your database over here, or else the upgrade won't work. Let's go over here. Let's do this. I forget how long this takes to run. The other thing I need to do is that URL is not in my host file. So let's add that. Windows. This is a very exciting part of the demo, I apologize. Now we can actually go there. Okay, so how are we doing over here? Okay, so this is a funny piece of SharePoint lore. When you ran the SharePoint 2007 version of this PowerShell, STSADM-O add content DB, how much output did SharePoint give you about what was going on? Nothing. Not a blinking cursor, not a darn thing. So if this took a really long time, it might have been because your database was big. It might have been because it just stopped working. You just had no way to tell. So, myself and every other SharePoint admin under the sun complained to Microsoft about it, and they said, okay, we heard you. We'll give you some feedback. We went from no information to the 0.01% as to how far along we were. Just a spinning wheel. No, 0.01% to tell us how far we've gone. Now, right now, this is creating, I told you about that upgrade log. It's creating a log in here. Program files, common files. You guys know the location. Not 12. So it's creating this file right here. And if you look through, if you do enough of these, you'll start noticing some common pain points. The vast majority of your upgrade performance, I guess we'll ask it as a question, where is your SharePoint performance, your upgrade performance, where is that determined? What's the bottleneck every time? I heard somebody whisper it. Database, yes. SQL I/O is far and away the number one determining factor of how quickly your upgrades happen, every single time. True story. Had a customer, we were doing a test migration for them. They had one big SQL box, but they had two instances on the box, licensing issues or whatever. So they had their production instance, and it was on very fast disks, and then they had their test instance, the one that we were using, which was on slower disks. So we move their 2007 database over, attach it to the test instance, run the mount, took 71 minutes, which was not bad, not the longest I've done by a long stretch, 71 minutes. So we start looking through it, and we find some FAB40 stuff, and we clean it out, and we're going to make another run. We make another backup, and I'm like, you know, 71 minutes was kind of long for that size of a database. Can we put it on the fast disks, but on the test instance? So we're using the same processors, the same RAM and all that, but faster disks. And they're like, oh, yeah, we can do that. We put them on the fast disks. The same database went from 71 minutes to 7 minutes. 10% of the time, the only thing that changed was the I/O. The only thing that changed was they had cruddy drives for their test instance and good drives for their production one. So the reason I bring that up is if you're looking through your log file to see what's going on, you're going to see a lot of just SQL stuff. You're going to see a lot of places where SharePoint says, I sent over some DDL for SharePoint, dynamic data stuff, and I sent over some stuff to SQL, and I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for SQL to get done. I/O absolutely is the most important part. Here's another question that people are going to ask, and I got it this morning at the booth. How long will it take to upgrade my database? That's kind of like asking how much is a new car, or how long is a string. But what makes that more complicated is you can have three databases that are exactly the same size on exactly the same spindles and take radically different amounts of time to upgrade. So as you're looking at your upgrade scenario, you really need to run through each database to see exactly how long it's going to take. So here's the thing. So let's say we've got three databases that are all 10 gig apiece. One database has a lot of PowerPoint documents in it. One database has a lot of list items in it, text documents, small things. And the third database has a few list items, documents, and that kind of stuff, but heavy on versions, a lot of revisions. Those three databases are going to take radically different amounts of time to upgrade. What do you guys think the fastest one will be? PowerPoint one, exactly. It doesn't have a lot of items in it, and they're all big items. So the upgrade process is going to be able to go through, jiggle some stuff around the database, do its magic, and get done pretty quickly. Because it's got the same amount of content, 10 gig, but it's in, you know, larger chunks. Of the two that are left, who's going to be the fastest? The one with the small number of documents and some versions, or the one with lots and lots of documents? Don't be shy. Lots of documents. Did I ask faster or slower? Did I ask which one is going to be faster or slower? Faster. You say the one with lots of documents is going to be faster. Anybody think the one with the low number of documents is going to be faster? You're all very smart, or you've sat through this talk before. In SharePoint 2007, there are two tables that have documents in them. One table has the active document, the current document, and another table has all the previous versions. Seemed like a good idea at the time, right? We keep all the active documents in one place, keep all the old cruddy ones in another table. But what happens? Every time you upload a new version of the document, SQL has to take the old version of the document, copy it to a different table, and then bring your new document in. A lot of I/O. So in SharePoint 2010, they changed that, still have two tables, but now one table has all of the documents, and the other table has a pointer to the current version of the document. Much better performance, because now every document goes right into that table, and they just go flip a bit on the pointer. Much, much faster. But the problem is we have to pay for that fix in the upgrade process. So if you have a lot of versions, for every one of your version files, they have to get copied to the other table, and all the things need to get linked back up. So you can have two databases that are exactly the same size, but take radically different times to upgrade because of some of those things. So that's another thing you should do if you can find a good way to figure out if you've got a lot of versions, if you can clean those versions up. Every table or every document library that's got versions should have a maximum number so that you don't end up with a bunch. And if you find, here's another little stinker, if you find a document library or a list that has versions enabled but doesn't have a maximum number of versions, assume it's got a billion versions of every document, your instinct is then to go in and cap it at like 10. That's good, but it doesn't fix the problem. You have to actually go in and touch every document. So if you've got a document that's got 100 versions, you go into the document library, set the max number of versions to 10, you still have 100 versions of that document until you go in and touch that document again. And there are some automated tools. If you're brave enough to do PowerShell in SharePoint 2007, there's some ways to do it. But that will kill you for upgrade times. Okay, so we can see that this happened. Upgrade completed with errors. We're not too terribly surprised with that. We kind of knew that was coming. So let's see what we've got here. So we've got some of these. Oh, I didn't put a root site in there on purpose. Look at me go. So let's take this URL and let's see if it renders. Let's see what happens. My app pool's got to warm some of that up. So as we're troubleshooting some of this stuff, having that ULS log viewer is kind of handy. Most of the time you're going to do open from ULS or just hit Control U, and it's going to pre-feed that in. Again, if you've got multiple boxes, then you can point it here at another location. You can see here, it's trying to load that stuff up. It's trying to hit those, you can see that. This tool interface is kind of clunky, but the key to it is if you hit the end button, if you have that one at the bottom highlighted, it'll auto-scroll. So I told you that there were, of the Fab 40, 20 were site templates and 20 were site definitions. The site templates, which I hope is where I'm going now, they should work because they were based on a known definition, a known good definition, so they should be fine. It's the 20 that are definitions that are going to give you a problem. So let's see what's going on here. Still going through, still doing the thing. All right. So let me see what, while we're waiting for that. Okay, so we've covered that. Let's give this a minute to warm up. Oh, there it goes. Okay. So these were 20 of the ones that were based on site templates. Hopefully they all work. So that worked. Not so scary, huh? So these are the ones that when you installed the Fab 40, these were the STP ones. These were the ones that worked. So we had that. So that was templates. Let's see how these work. And I think the root site will work. Now, who doesn't love this? An unexpected error has occurred. Thanks, SharePoint. But here's where we got that correlation ID. So now we can go through, and I never copy the whole thing out. I've had some bad luck with that, but I'll copy the first chunk. If I go in here, and actually this one's quiet enough I can do this. So I will normally go through, find that correlation ID, and that's all of the transactions that were based on that one request. So we're seeing, okay, we're trying to go to the bug database. Here's the problem. So this is one of those setup file errors that we would have, and I apologize. I don't know any way to make that bigger, and I don't have Zoom installed. So what that's saying is I'm trying to go to this bug database page. That's based on a definition that's on the file system. I tried to go to that file, and it's just not there. I tried to go to the default ASPX. I can't find it. And so you can see some of the logic as it follows through. So this one, it tried to go to 14 template features. Couldn't find it. So then it fell back to 12 template features. Couldn't find it. Then it tried even 60. SharePoint 2003. Couldn't find it. And then thought, well, we'll give her another go. Nah, still not there. So this is one of those things where if you've got an upgrade that fails and you're poking around and you get an error message, pop into the ULS log, because that tells you exactly what the problem is. You've got a feature that's missing. It's got this name. That's where the file is. And if we looked at our upgrade log, our error log, it would probably show us that as well. So that's pretty handy right there. So let's pop back over here. I got like 5 minutes. Let's go through some more. All right, so I've spoken a lot about the much maligned Fab 40. So you really want to delete the ones that have Fab 40. If you can't, if they really are mission critical, then your next best bet is to get the information out of them and put them in something in 2010 that's based on like a team site or something. There's some cruddy ways to do that with like Explorer View and things like that. Downstairs, there's a few of the partners down there, AvePoint, Acceler, those kind of guys. They can also do it with third-party tools. You can point it at a cruddy 2007 Lister library and a clean 2010, and they can pull the stuff across. I almost feel irresponsible telling you this next bit because I'm afraid it's going to encourage bad behavior. So promise me that none of you will actually do this, but you can fix this by installing the FAB40 in 2010. They are solutions. They will install in 2010. They will fix these rendering errors. But they will break all sorts of stuff in SharePoint 2010. This is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. I've got a customer that had the FAB40. We did all this. I told them this is a terrible idea. They're like, will it make the page render? I'm like, yeah. They're like, well, we're going to do it. I'm like, have you heard the stories about like selling your soul to the devil and stuff like that? Because that's what this is. We're going to do it. So they did it. And the page is rendered, and they were very happy. And then the first time in 2010, they were some other place, and they tried to do a save site as template. They couldn't, because part of what this stupid thing installed and installed some features that don't exist in 2010 mode and all that, they can't install, they can't do save site as template anymore, ever, anywhere in their farm because of that. That. So don't do it. Terrible. Custom themes. How many of you guys in SharePoint 2007 are using custom themes? You guys just got your money's worth out of this session. Absolutely no branding in SharePoint 2007 upgrades to 2010 in 2010 mode. You can obviously do the 2007 visual upgrade mode and everything's fine. In 2010, no branding upgrades. No master pages, no CSS, no themes, nothing, none of it. Let's get that out of the way. Okay, so if you've got a custom theme, two things to keep in mind. Number one, you're going to have to redo your theme, and themes have changed radically between 2007 and 2010. But more importantly, there is a gigantic bug around custom themes. And I've not had good luck reproducing it, but I've had it happen to like four or five different customers. We saw that list of stuff that happens when you run your test SP content database. One of the things that it will complain about is a custom theme. And it will tell you, can't find this theme, whatever. It is imperative that if you've ever used a custom theme in 2007, you copy that custom theme to 2010 before you mount the database. So with all the other errors, like the FAB40 ones I told you, go ahead and upgrade the database, go fix the problem afterwards, and it'll all magically work. And that's how it works with everything but themes. For whatever reason, when you mount a database that has ever had a custom theme, when SharePoint upgrades that web, it doesn't create any of the 2010 master pages. So it'll come up and it'll look fine in 2007, but when you try to switch it to 2010 mode, it won't switch, ever, until you find a way to manually go in and create all those master pages. And it can be done, it's kind of ugly. And you can't just add the theme afterwards and have it work, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but have your theme on 2010 before you mount that database. Got a couple of minutes. All right, so feature admin. This is a great tool if you've got features that are showing up in your site collection that you don't know what they are and you're not using them and you're getting errors. This allows you in a supported fashion to remove features from SharePoint. And I'll bring it up here quick. That's a great one. Again, if you're going to be upgrading, if you've got features in 2007 that you can take out, I recommend doing that. Here are those PowerShell scripts I told you about. These will walk through, find missing setup files, missing features. This is a guy over in the UK, Phil Childs. That is the most clever URL I have ever seen in my entire life. It is a website that is nothing but PowerShell scripts for SharePoint. And we all know that PowerShell everything is verb-noun. He named his website get-spscripts because it's all PowerShell scripts for SharePoint. I would love to shake that man's hand. That's some clever stuff. So he's got a bunch of blog posts on removing missing features, missing web parts, missing setup files. If you go to his page, they're all linked on the right. But here's some nice. This slide deck should be out on the portal. If it's not, let me know and I'll get it to you. So this is the one that does missing web parts. Yada, yada, do stuff with the thing. So I'll show you a couple more demos. I got about 10 seconds. Fill out your evaluations. I'll be at the Rackspace booth downstairs. Come down, chat with me. We're right next to a food station. So go over, get something to eat, get something to drink, swing by, say hey. I'll be up here for a couple more minutes. If you have any questions, let me know. Thank you very much. And I'll flip over to feature admin here for those who want to stay an extra minute. Thank you.